thought you knew, but you have no idea. It's the Urban Sports Scene.
You are listening to the Urban Sports Scene with myself, Wole, Ray Jeezy, and Will T. We're doing our social distancing show. Let me pass the fellas in. What's going on?
He got disconnected. Hold on.
That's cool, though. What's going on, Will?
Nothing much. Chilling.
My man. First off, you know, I want to, you know, have this show in honor of the homie, Mega Ron. Ron passed 6 years ago last Sunday. Will, any, you know, cool things to say about Mega? You know, he's a big friend, a very good friend of ours.
Yeah, great friend of ours. Like I said, I've known Ron a little bit longer than you guys, but you guys were definitely, you know, spent more time with him because, you know, you went to college with him. Just fun loving, just all around good person. Could drink you under the table.
I know, right?
And love sports, and particularly basketball. Basketball, he had a very deep love for basketball, all aspects of it. Coaching the game, teaching the game, playing.
Mm-hmm.
So he's definitely missed.
Yeah, man. You know, Ron had a weird sense of basketball. Like, he was the only dude I knew in college that liked Dirk Nowitzki. Like, Dallas was his team. Like, which dude you knew around the way his team was like that, the Dallas Mavericks? And Dirk was, like, his favorite player. And hated on Vince Carter, though. But to your point, though, like, Ron was one of the better dudes out, I mean, I've met in my life, to be honest with you. And a guy that, you know, if you've seen him from a distance, being such a big dude, folks would think, oh, he, you know, he tries to run the place. But, you know, I mean, a gentle giant for real. Go ahead, Will.
Definitely, you know, and they said a good die young.
Sure.
It's definitely true when it came along.
Oh, definitely. All right, subscribe to our podcast on Stitcher, Spotify, iTunes, and Google Play. Search the Urban Sports Scene. Tweet us at Urban Sports Scene and hit us up on our Urban Sports Scene Facebook page. Also, join our Urban Sports Scene Facebook group. Search Urban Sports Scene, sports bloggers, sports podcasters, and sports debates. Will T.
Let's get into our tradition, the pregame.
As part of our PG Baller series, we will have PG Basketball and Maryland Terps legend, the Wizard, Walt Williams, on the show. At 8:25, we'll talk about the Washington Wizards NBA restart. Finally, at 8:35, we'll have the assistant coach for the WNBA's Phoenix Mercury, Chastity Melvin, on the show. We'll talk about the new WNBA season. Ray, are you there?
I'm in the building.
My man, could you introduce our good guest?
All right, so to our listeners here locally, if you're in the DMV or specifically are you from PG County, our first guest, he really needs no introduction. However, it's of course my pleasure to highlight just a few of his accomplishments. Our guest is a native of Prince George's County as well as a graduate of the Prince George's County Public School System. I say that proudly, where he attended Crossland High School. While at Crossland, he was a standout basketball player who led his high school team to three consecutive Maryland 2A state finals appearances. In his acclaimed high school career, it landed him a spot in one of the most memorable Capital Classic All-Star games that featured guys such as Hubert Davis, Todd Day, Christian Laettner, forgive me y'all for that one, Jay Billis, and the late Malik Steely.
Mm-hmm.
He would then take his talent to the University of Maryland, where from 1988, 1992, he developed into one of the top players in the country that included being selected for the AP All-America second team as a senior, averaging a school record 26.8 points, 5.6 rebounds, 3.6 assists, and 2.1 steals that season. The Sacramento Kings selected him with the 7th overall pick in the 1992 NBA draft, which was just the beginning of a decade-plus NBA career in which he acquired numerous accolades while amassing 8,385 points over his career. He's also coach, sideline reporter, author, financial investor, and by all indications, a great family man. Urban Sports Scene family, welcome to the show. And what I hope is his first of many appearances, Mr. Walt Williams. What's up, bro?
Hey, my man. What's going on? Dang, that was nice right there.
I know, right?
I didn't even capture all of it. Good grief.
Oh, man, I was thinking the same thing.
All right, man. What's happening, man? What's going on?
Oh, it's a pleasure to have you on. It's a pleasure to have you on.
So, oh, man. Pleasure to be here.
We appreciate it. So, all right. Yeah. PG Basketball has gotten so much notoriety thanks to the documentary Basketball County in the Water. You were in it. What were your thoughts on the documentary?
Man, I learned some things, especially in the beginning, that the history part when we migrated over to PG County. So that was awesome to learn that. I didn't know that until then, but I just thought that it was great to have a show that highlighted the great players that came from this area and that continue to come from this area. So, I mean, it was just awesome to be a part of that, and it was just great to be able to shine a light and show the world the greatness that we always around here that we always knew about.
Definitely. Do you think there'll be a part two or maybe some extra episodes of the documentary?
Well, yeah, I think it should. You know, I think that man, it was just a fraction of the amount of players that came from this area, and even guys who didn't, just were impactful. I think you could have touched upon the coaching aspect. And in my generation, I can't speak too much before my time, but from my generation, man, it was we were lucky enough to play for coaches that were that thought outside the box. You know, the game back in the day was played when guys were 6'8", 6'7", and above. Those guys were traditionally back to the basket, you know, near the basket. The game was played inside out. But even at the high school level and in the public school system, the guys we played against, just virtually all the coaches in that league allowed their big guys like myself to be versatile. So that led to me adapting to the college level very easy. You know, playing against dudes like Byron Tucker, Mike Tate, Jay Byers, you know, Monty Williams. All of these guys are 6'8", 6'9", and above, but were able to were just as deadly from the 3-point line as they was around the basket to create their own shots and things like that. So I grew up playing against dudes like that. So when we went to the college level, it was a seamless transition. And luckily enough, we played for coaches that allowed us to express our natural abilities.
So when you traveled the country as part of the NBA, can you tell us back then what, I guess, the general perception was of the D.C. area, PG County? I don't know if you represented, because a lot of times back then we would say we were from D.C. just because nobody knew where PG was or what PG was. So I'm wondering just how you think the documentary helped, you know, us on a national landscape, because I thought it was dope that we mentioned now with a lot of the big cities, again, the New York, Chicago, L.A.'s. I've asked everybody this question, and everybody feels like the documentary is just a blessing in terms of just putting us on the map. What do you think?
Well, yeah, I think so. But I can tell you this. I thought that we had a moment before the world caught on, really, where someone like myself was playing at Maryland. Mm-hmm. And you, from this area, we wore high socks. And so that's just something that I brought to the stage and playing at Maryland, and being a 6'8 guard as well. All of a sudden, right behind that, you start seeing an influx of guys at the major D1 level, moving on, coming to the pros right behind me. And the identifier was when you saw somebody with high socks on, you knew he was from that area. You didn't know specifically that it was PG County, but you knew he was from that D.C., Maryland, that Virginia, that area there.
Yeah.
And so I thought that was an identifier. And it was nice to see those young guys coming behind that was able to be 6'7", 6'5", 6'8", and above and be guards out there and show that they can handle the ball. And you see it graduates to somebody like Kevin Durant, who's a 6'11", legitimate guard. And, you know, I think that had it not been from way in the beginning, what I talked about, the coaches that we played for that allowed us to play in that way, be versatile on the court, I think that led to what you see now.
Yeah, so I'm just going to ask you this as a side question. I'm getting off track. My bad, fellas. But
you
just went to Kevin Durant, and you talking about how tall you are, 6'8", can handle the rock. Like, how would you fare in today's game? Because it's perfect for someone like yourself.
Oh, man, I would love it. You can't no touching on defense, not on the perimeter either. Oh, man. It would be sick. You know, like my high school coach, Earl Hawkins, man, he really, and Darrell Matthews, they really encouraged me to make plays, from the perimeter. And so my foundation was a street ball player. I had never played on teams before growing up until I was in high school. Hmm. So, when you're playing pickup ball on the blacktop, there's no posting up or you're not going to get the ball that much. So you got to be able to handle that ball. And so that was kind of a blessing for me to not play on teams early on. Cause I was not extremely tall like I am now, but I was on the taller side as a younger kid. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if I would have been the same player had I played on teams early on in my career. So I think I benefited from playing pickup and streetball games virtually until I was in high school.
So, Walt, where did you play most of your streetball in that? Was in Temple Hills? Where did you play most of your street ball?
I used to play all over, man. I played in in the back of Benjamin Stoddard.
Okay.
That's the area I grew up in, Temple Hills, part of PG County. Mm-hmm. We used to ride our bikes from there sometimes all the way down to Berry Farms, man, and play down there every now and again. You know, but that was limited. Them dudes would chase us off the court at some point. You know what I'm saying? So, we didn't go there all the time. But, you know, that was crazy that they would chase us off the court. And then, you know, maybe a week or two later, we'd come back for the hoop. I always grew up until I got into college thinking that, you know, the hint of violence was a part of basketball.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know that they could play basketball until I was in college. it would be nothing for a high school game. we played in a high school game, and the next day, you know, they fight or something, if there's something going on, or, you know, just pickup games, and, you know, a fight break out, whatever, you know. So it was always, I just thought that was just a part of the game. Until college. And I was like, what? We out here, we just playing basketball out here? So that was eye-opening for me, like a lot of things.
So Walt, I read that.
You won't play in the Capitol Classic.
I'm sorry.
Oh, go ahead. Go ahead.
Will.
Yeah, Walt, this is Will. You chose to go to Maryland with them going in, coming off or about to go into the NCAA violations due to Bob Wade. And you still chose to go to Maryland and play under a relatively unknown coach in Gary Williams. Can you take us through what was your decision to not rescind your commitment to Maryland during that time?
I try not to put so much pressure on myself and thinking a whole lot about it. I just figured that things would come to me naturally. If in my heart I felt like I wanted to leave, then I would explore that. You know, I would explore that avenue, but every day, man, I woke up wanting to be a Turk, wanting to be around my family and have them come see me and my friends. And, you know, by that time, my teammates, they were like my family as well. Mm. So I didn't want to leave them at all. I would have felt like, you know, I was abandoning my family.
Mm.
And so, you know, this year right here will be my 50th annual family reunion that we have missed because of the pandemic, but it would have been the 50th this year. And so that's what I'm used to, man. I'm used to family and being loyal and things like that. So it never really entered my mind to leave my brothers, man. And so I wanted to stay and fight it out with them. And I looked at Maryland as this great thing that Lynn Bias inspired me to want to come behind. And the perception of the school was not at that time what I thought it should be.
Hmm.
And so I wanted to be a part of rebuilding that as well.
You just spoke about
going to Maryland after, you know, the unfortunate passing of Lynn Bias. Was there any pressure put upon, did you feel any pressure to put upon yourself to have to kind of lift the program and put it on your shoulders after coming after such of a dark time?
No, not really, because when I looked at Len Bias, I thought he was a superhero, man. So I never thought that, you know, I could inspire kids like him, or be like him, or even be mentioned in the same sentence as him. So what I thought to myself is that, you know, man, I remember us playing the pickup games in behind Benjamin Stark, and we used to call out names who we going to pretend to be that day, and I always used to be Len Bias. and I just wanted to have that impact. I wanted kids around the neighborhood, around the way, so when they played pickup games, I wanted them to pretend like they were me. And so that inspired me. And that's what I really focused on, and that part of it. And so I worked hard. My teammates were inspiring for me. I played for good coaches, like you said, Gary Williams, Bob Wade, all of those guys. All of my coaches that I had in my life were always they were huge for me, building my confidence, and it just grew and grew. And that was probably the biggest asset that I had in the growth of my game, is that I had great coaches that inspired me and made me very confident.
So, Walt, you mentioned Len Bias. So what about in his game? What about his game inspired you the most?
Man, this one time my dad took me to, my dad was a big Tar Heel fan. So he took me to a Terp game because they were playing the Tar Heels. And I grew up, I was a Georgetown Hoyas fan. I love John Thompson and, you know, all of that right there. So, and then, man, I saw Len Bias pull up in the game we was watching. I saw him pull up for this jump shot, man. And it was the prettiest thing I had ever seen, bro. And I was just like, who is that dude? And after that, I started to watch, you know, like George Michael, the sports machine, mm-hmm. man. I used to watch that thing all the time looking for when Len Bias was going to come on there. And all of a sudden, I just found myself watching a lot of Maryland games, and I turned into being a Terp fan, you know, from him. So that was the biggest thing about Len Bias was his jump shot. That thing was beautiful, absolutely beautiful, something I've never seen before.
So you mentioned the Hoyas, Georgetown. Was Big John upset that you didn't go to Georgetown? Was he pissed off at you?
John, you know what? John recruited me when we were going on sanctions, and they were allowing me to transfer and play right away. That's when he expressed interest. But in high school, he didn't recruit me. Unfortunately.
So if he did recruit you, would you have went to Georgetown? Would you have went to Georgetown?
You know what? Probably not, man. By that time, I was just infatuated with Len Bias, man. I'm telling you right now, man, I wanted to be like him. I love Len Bias, man. So when I had the opportunity, actually, my high school coach called them, Earl Hawkins. He called them and let them know that I had some interest in the school. So even Maryland didn't really outright recruit me right away. Bob Wade didn't recruit me right away. So when he came to the high school, though, he came to the school and saw me play, and then it was on from there.
So Walt, real quick, why don't Maryland and Georgetown play each other, man? Like, what's up with that?
Oh, man, I don't know. I just think that that's a game right there that I wish I could have been a part of. And when I saw that game after I had left, man, I was jealous of that right there. I think that that's something, you know, when you see each other around town, I mean, I think that's a recruiting tool for either school. I think that you'll be able to keep more guys at home wanting to play in that game. And of course, we know we have the best high school players in the country. Mm-hmm. And so if you can recruit good here, you're going to consistently put on a great show and have a solid team year after year.
You're listening to the Urban Sports Scene right now.
You're listening to the Urban Sports Scene.
Go ahead. Well, you got it. No, you got it. You're doing it. Go ahead, bro.
You're listening to the Urban Sports Scene. Right now, we have PG County basketball and Maryland Terp legend, Walt
the Wizard Williams on the line. Walt, where did you get that nickname from, the Wizard?
So my man, Jesse Martin, me, him, and Gerard Mousoff came in and sang in our freshman year in 88. So he was my roommate, and he used to call me Wizzy Walt. and Bob Wade heard him calling me that one day, and we were playing pickup games, and I was I was making tricky passes.
I can just tell you guys, like, one of the first memories I had of him was I actually attended the Capital Classic game that he played in. I think that was what, 88
88.
Yep, right over the Capital Center in considered Largo.
Landover, whatever you want to call it now.
It's up in Marlboro now. For tax purposes, it shifted changes. every so often. No, and I just remember, watching him in that game and just being so proud seeing, someone, because that's when I was first getting into starting to play basketball and seeing somebody that high profile from PG County, going out there and all of his accolades and, the show he put on during that game. So,
absolutely.
Yeah, man. Yeah, I tell you what, playing in that game was easy for me because an easy transition because of all the guys I had played with or played against in PG County, man. It's just a host of guys in public school, in this small area. We probably came walking distance from each other almost. And so, it was just on every team, at least one major D1 dude. And, so it was just unbelievable competition. But back to answering your question, man, sorry about that.
Thanks,
but, Coach Wade, he started, we were playing pickup games one day early on in the season. And he was like, man, I can't call you Magic. So I got to think of another name. And so he heard Jesse Martin calling me Wizzy Walt. And then he just stopped calling me the Wizard. And from that point on, it just kind of stuck.
Okay. That's a cool story.
Yeah,
let's talk about the 19, like you transitioned from college into the NBA. 1992 draft. I think you were projected to go somewhere around, maybe 5 or 6 or something like that. The Wizards had the number 6. Well, the Wizards now, but they were the Bullets, had the number 6 pick. They were on the clock. What were you thinking?
Oh, man, I thought I was going to go there. Just being from that area, I know everybody was hoping for that. I was excited at the opportunity to possibly play at home, but it just didn't work out that way.
Were you disappointed that they took Tom Gugliotta instead of yourself?
Man, I'm coming from Prince George's County, man. Now I'm got an opportunity to go to the NBA. $10 could have been better. Just last
I mean, you did go to
Sacramento. I didn't care where I was going, brother. Believe me, I'm just trying to get it going. They about to pay me for this. Let's go. So it didn't matter. I mean, it would have been great if it had been at home, but hey, it was all good playing out in Sacramento as well.
Mm-hmm.
So how was that transition going from, playing basketball in your backyard primarily for all of your career to that point to going to transition in Sacramento?
Oh, it was really weird, especially Sacramento, coming from around here, it's city life, and then going out to Sacramento. I mean, I remember the first day I got there, I landed there, and the equipment manager came and picked me up to bring me to the hotel. And when we rode past the arena just sat on this big field, all this grass, and I saw all these sheep out there. It was like they grazing sheep or something out there. And I was like, where am I? So it was much different a much different place than where I was trying to tuck on the other side of the country. And so it was some adjustment because now I'm on the West Coast, and so it was a lot of things that were different, you know, off the court. And so, but it was a great time. I had great teammates. I was blessed with having some great teammates who welcomed me in and showed me the ropes early on. And so we had a great time. I had guys like Wayman Tisdale, you know, Mitch Richmond, Spud Webb, the L Train, Randy Brown, you know, all of these guys. So those guys was cool, man. And they showed me a good time and they helped me adapt. And they were like family to me. So it was a great time.
Well, Walt, man, we want to thank you for being on the show, man. You've been awesome. Is there anything you would like to add?
Oh, man. I just appreciate you guys having me on the show and just, you know, once again, shining a light on PG County, man. You know, it's well-deserved. I was just blessed to have so many great coaches in my life. Earl Hawkins at Crossland High School, Bob Wade, Gary Williams, you know, those guys were unbelievably instrumental in my growth. And man, it meant the world to me to play for them and have them inspire me. And I was lucky enough to play in front of my family and get the job done, man. Mm-hmm. So it was just a fun ride. And the greatest thing about it all is that whenever I came home, or even when I was a young boy in the league and hanging out at the club and stuff like that, man, the city always showed me love. They always expressed love for me, man, and that was awesome because that made it just so much more fun. Mm. It wasn't just about on the court hooping, but it was also about, you know, hanging around in the city. And those guys, that was a great part of the whole ride as well. So it was a great thing to be a part of PG County.
Oh man, thank you so much, Walt. We appreciate you being an ambassador for this great basketball county and just this county in general. Period.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear you on that.
I want to say thank you for being an ambassador for PG County basketball and just an ambassador for PG County. Period.
Oh, yeah, man. It was fun, man. You know, the Hot Sox, the threes up. You know, it's just cool to see, you know, you watch the game and you see people doing things that you inspired. And it's just great, man, to be from the city and know that these serious ballers right here, you know, are getting it done, man. It's fun to watch them play. So I'm so blessed and humbled to be from PG County.
Well, all right, brother. Hope to have you back on. Back on sometime, man. Thanks again.
Yep. All right, man.
Thank you so much. That is the Wizard, Walt Williams, man. Appreciate him for being on. All right, the Washington Wizards, the NBA restart is starting for them on Friday. We'll discuss it after the break. You're listening to the Urban Sports Scene.
For ages.
You dig?
Deuces.
Listening to the Urban Sports Scene with myself, Wole, Ray Jeezy, Will T. Let me patch in the fellas. I believe Ray's helping, working on getting our next guest for the next segment. There we go. Will T, what's going on? What's going on, bro? That was a good one, right? That was a good one with Walt.
Yeah, that was a good one, man. Yeah, man. That was definitely a good one. That was, I don't want to judge and rank any, compare that one against any of the other ones.
Yeah.
But, I am, but I think that's probably like the best one that we did.
Yeah, it was definitely up there between him and Mike Sweetin. I think we can be honest with that one. I think Mike Sweetin was real good too.
Yeah.
But I just think Walt, because of our age, right, and we grew up pretty much watching the dude ball, and he pretty much broke it down. It kind of put you back in that place, right? It put you back in that place as a kid, like, okay.
Yeah, it was like a coming of age, because that's when I really started to like follow the game of basketball and watch college and watch NBA. And, you know, it's funny when you're coming up, you think you have dreams of playing in the NBA or playing at some level, but to actually see someone from where you're from.
Yes.
Actually.
I agree.
You see his path. You see his trajectory. You know, it was incredible. For me, it was incredible. And it's aspirational. So,
yeah.
I'm glad that we got a chance to have a lengthy conversation with him about, you know, his career at Crossland, then at the University of Maryland, and then into the NBA.
Yeah, I wish I did a little bit longer. I wanted to hear his opinion about those Duke teams he had to play against, because that was tough for him. But let's talk about the Wizards real quick. Let's make it fast, you know what I mean, because we got to guess. The Washington Wizards take on the Phoenix Suns in their restart opener. They will not have Bradley Beal, and they will not have Davis Bertans. Which player has an opportunity to show true growth without Beal in the lineup?
For me, there are two players.
Mm-hmm.
One is that. Well, no, there's three. I'm gonna say there's three.
Mm-hmm.
One is Roy Hachimura.
Mm-hmm.
Two is Troy Brown, who's the first round pick from, I think, two drafts ago.
Yeah, I think so.
If I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, something like that. I'm not a big
and
Troy Brown fan.
And then there's Mo Wagner.
Yeah, I think that's what I'm trying to see.
Definitely an opportunity. There's definitely an opportunity because you saw sporadic showing of Mo Wagner's talent and what he was able to do in this system.
Mm-hmm.
But with him, he'll definitely get an opportunity to be one of the top three options. You know, while they're in Orlando, these last eight games, I'm just going to be honest with you, there's no way in hell they're making
it. Not at all, bro.
But, yeah, this would be a great opportunity for, you know, Mo Wagner, Troy Brown Jr., and Roy Hachimura to, you know, get themselves ready for next season.
Oh yeah,
the off season.
I agree.
I'm not going to jinx it. Hopefully, they do make it to the NBA playoffs.
Yeah, you're being nice.
They are able to crack the top eight.
And they ruin draft picks and whatnot. Man, they're ruining the draft picks and whatnot. It is what it is. I did say this would be a quick segment. Phoenix Mercury assistant coach Chastity Melvin will join us after break. Listening to the Urban Sports Team.
For ages.
You dig?
Deuces.
Awesome. You are listening to the Urban Sports Scene with myself, Wole, Ray Jeezy, and Will T. I'm going to patch in the fellas. This is like a normal routine now. You guys got to get used to this. All right, there we go. All right, Ray, will you introduce our guest?
Absolutely. Our next guest is one whose resume, I'm just going to say, is just so amazing. It would be impossible for me to share it in just one segment, as she is truly one of the reigning pioneers in women's sports history. She's a native of North Carolina and is dubbed an ACC legend following her All-American basketball career at the North Carolina State University, which included leading the Wolfpack to a Final Four appearance in her senior season in 1998 and also landing her a place in the NC State University Hall of Fame. She's a former ABL and WNBA first-round pick, as well as a WNBA All-Star whose professional sports career spanned over two decades. Amazing, including stints with the Cleveland Rockers, Chicago Sky, and, of course, our very own Washington Mystics. She's also amassed championships throughout the world during her playing career overseas, which entails stops in Spain, Turkey, Russia, and China. She's not only known for her stellar basketball career, as her success, extends off the court. This individual is just an amazing woman, sports radio host, MC, speaker, and philanthropist. She's also a strong woman of faith who authored a devotional book entitled At the End of the Day. She's currently an assistant coach for the Phoenix Mercury, and it's been my pleasure to introduce her. Welcome to the Urban Sports Scene, Miss Chastity Melvin. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. So just based on what I just said, you know, introducing you, you're very well-traveled, of course, and we've heard reports, we've seen pictures, there's also been commercials I've seen. IMG looks amazing, but just explain to us how it's being in the bubble, or in the wubble, as they call it.
Yeah, I don't refer to it as the wubble. I joke around. I was like, I'm too grown to say for me, but I get it. You know, I get it. I'm old school, though. I'm so old school. But it's really different being here in the bubble. I just kind of mentally, to prepare for it, I kind of looked at it as I was going overseas and I was playing somewhere in the middle of nowhere in Russia. And so it was basically my apartment and the gym. So that's kind of how I look at it here. And I think a lot of the WNBA players kind of look at it in the same way. They have played overseas in kind of remote areas, like, there's really not many places to go other than the places you go eat. So we don't get to go out to eat. So I think all the players miss that, including the NBA guys. But it is what it is. The strangest part is obviously playing on the court without the fans, without the media sitting, you know, baselines at the end of the baselines, and even the ball kids and, you know, managers, and just everything is just so weird and so different on the court. On the TV, I'm watching the game tonight, and I'm like, okay, this looks really cool, and this feels insane, but sitting sideline, it's just like, you know, if the team goes on a 7-0 run, you don't really have that fan. You got to kind of, your team has to find a way to pull themselves back into the game. So, obviously, Phoenix Mercury having one of the biggest and best fan bases, you know, our team is going to have to get used to that. We don't have our sixth man, so he's got to suck it up and play. So it is really different, actually. And the girls are, I think, the young women adjust and get used to it. And then the way we sit on the sidelines is a new normal. You know, we're not really sitting with our players. Players are sitting behind us. The coaches are like 6 feet apart. So it's a little bit different.
But oh, it's you know, a lot different.
Back. Yeah, it's a lot different. But basketball is back.
Absolutely.
And we're just trying to do our best to do our part in helping, you know, show that sports can come back in some type of way during this pandemic.
Amazing. You mentioned the guys, LeBron James, Trae Young, and John Morant. They were just a few that were seen, you know, sporting the WNBA logo hoodie. You know, how does the support, you know, from those guys, especially, you know, notable names like I just mentioned, also, you know, you're featured on ABC, which I think is dope, such as you were in the finals last year. How is that, you know, helping to progress your game?
Well, playing on ABC is huge. I'm from a rural area, and even when I played, you know, people back home that didn't have access to cable or satellite and different things, they weren't able to see me on television. So at the end of the day, ABC and whenever you know, people in the U.S. of A can watch on a national local station where they can see all the games. I mean, that's huge, because then you get people to actually don't get to see the games that don't have teams in their state, you know, their state or their city to really support. They can watch the games on TV and see what our young women are doing, not on the court, not only on the court, but off the court. Obviously, anytime the NBA guys rock anything, whether it's a WNBA hoodie, whether it's Gucci shorts, it's always for anyone, whether it's sneakers, you know. So like I said, you know, I mean, the hoodie is cool. I love the idea. People are calling me for the hoodie.
Nice.
I love our culture, love black folks. I'm like, hey, I don't have a hoodie. Like, I gotta get online and order a hoodie. Coaches, I had to tell people, coaches are different from players. I'm like learning that. I'm no longer a player where I got this and this and this. I'm a coach and we barely get anything. So, it's a lot different on the sidelines, but it's cool. So people want the hoodie, you know, that's marketing, and marketing is always good for any organization, especially when you have celebrities and NBA players wearing the sweatshirt and hoodie.
So Chastity, I'm sorry, you're listening to the Urban Sports Scene right now. We are chatting with Phoenix Mercury assistant coach Chastity Melvin, joins the live radio. So I just want to introduce you to my brothers here. We are a three-man show, and it's two of them, Wole and Will. And they're kind of like what I call Skylar Diggins Smith groupies. You know, they interview her.
Wow, really though? That's what we're doing? That's what we're doing right now?
You can't lift the veil of the show and let everyone in on our dirty secret.
I know, you can't do that to us.
Anyway, she what's dope about her is, first of all, she came back just looking amazing on the court. You know, her handles was back. Her J was there. The passing was excellent. But what stood out to me was in her interview, her first interview with Holly Rowe, I want to say it was after the first quarter, she did not comment on the game itself. She instead talked about the need for justice for Breonna Taylor and her family. And she, you know, you all were also wearing the shirts with the messages on the front, on the back, Black Lives Matter, say her name. You know, can you speak just about the league and how the league is going about advocating for social justice?
Well, as you guys know, I mean, and guys, don't feel bad. There are a lot of men who have a lot of questions on justice. It is well welcome. It's not, you know, it's not a bad thing at all. Also, just, you know, I mean, women have a unique voice, and, you know, black women are always the forefront of speaking their minds, and sometimes we go unheard and unnoticed and unacknowledged. And obviously the WNBA provides a great platform, especially during this time where most people don't get out, and our ladies are getting their stories shared on different platforms, different media platforms. And Skylar and a bunch of the young ladies are really passionate about it because, I mean, we can relate to other black women. And they have other stories, just like some of the men out here can relate to, like, a lot of the police brutality and being stopped and just nonsense that we've always dealt with. Like, I grew up in the rural South, so this is nothing new to me, but I'm enjoying that the young ladies, the young women, like my nieces and nephews, are out and using their voice, and they want to protest and they want to do things like this. So for them to take a stand, it's a difficult choice because there's a lot of criticism that comes for these players, like, hey, stick to the game, play the game. It's also a double whammy for the W players because we're still trying to make a strong foundation for our league. You know, the NBA is pretty much set. They're worldwide. They're, you know, $1 billion organization. So the WNBA is still also building the foundation for that. And on top of that, they're taking on another challenge as far as what's going on with our racial culture and Black Lives Matter. So it's a lot. And so for these young ladies to step up and really carry, like, two, I wouldn't say burdens. Burdens may not be the right word, but two very strong challenges is really good for them. And, you know, the 2 hours on the court where they get to play the game is where they let it all out, so.
Absolutely. I mean, I appreciate it. Of course, this is across the board, not just sports. This is our world right now. Mm-hmm. And, you know, just the fact that you all have that platform that you do, man, I just thank you. And I ask you to just continue the work that you're doing and encourage, of course, your team to do so.
But kind of changing gears to basketball, just mentioned Skylar and the game that she played. And I felt like, you know, just watching the game overall, your squad played well in the first half against the Sparks. But in the second half, the Sparks just seemed to have more energy and were able to kind of break the game open. Just want to know, was that due to rust? And you mentioned it earlier to some degree, but how long do you think it's going to take for the players to kind of get into peak basketball shape and adjust to the bubble?
I think it's going to take, for some teams, 2 games. Some teams, it'll take 3 to 5 games. You got to look at the Sparks. They know each other. Candace, Chelsea Gray, even with Simone coming over, she's a vet. So you know how vets do. Vets just know what it takes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not anything Derek is telling them over there. They're veterans of the game. They've been there, done that. And so they were very much used to playing with each other. We have Skylar hasn't played with Diana or Brittany Griner. We had Nia Coffey. Mm-hmm. We have a lot of people coming off the bench. A lot of new faces. We lost Dewana Bonner, who was key, you know, with once you get in the lull, she's able to get to the free throw line and do some things that she did for them a lot with the Phoenix Mercury as a sixth man, you know. she's got the most sixth man award. So we lost her. So we just need some time to gel. But I think overall it'll come. You know, it's a process. Obviously, we can't take too long, though, so it's got to be 5 games. You only got 22, so it's going to be a long season here in the bubble if we get it together. But, you know, every team is in the same boat. You know, some teams are starting out strong right now, and then it's just going to be tricky, you know, once we were already discussing the tiebreaker, and, you know you got to win those games early. Mm-hmm. So everyone's under the same pressure a little bit because Seattle – obviously, they have Sue Bird. They have all their stars, their entire team, except their head coach, who's not with them. But mm-hmm. They have their entire team. So they're used to playing with each other. New York is young. Connecticut didn't have some of their stars come back. D.C. didn't have their stars come back.
Yep.
So they're playing free with nothing to lose, and it's showing. You know, they got players who had to sit on the bench for a little bit. So once you get off that bench, you know.
Naisha.
You're trying to show people, hey, look, I should have been playing, or you're playing for the next contract. So, you know, there's a lot of different teams with different situations. Obviously, Minnesota still has Sylvia Fowles, Coach Reeves there, you know, with her strong foundation. So they might just need a little tuning up, but they know that system really well. So it just depends. So it's going to be a really tricky season for everyone. And the most important thing is players staying healthy.
So, Chastity, this is Wole, the other Skylar Diggins groupie, according to Ray.
What did he say?
I am the other Skylar Diggins groupie. My name is Wole. I'm the other Skylar Diggins groupie. What do you all need to do differently to bounce back tomorrow against the Indiana Fever?
Oh, just not get down when our shots aren't falling. And I think it's going to be interesting for a lot of the players because the ladies are in great shape, first of all, as far as being physically fit and just in shape. They've been working out, but they're not in game shape. You know, so cutting the shots, just different rotations on defense, and, like, they haven't played 5-on-5.
Mm-hmm.
And that's everyone. So, you know, I think just, you know, not putting too much pressure on yourself when you don't have it right away. Like, you're used to doing a move like Brittany. Brittany hasn't played 5-on-5. She hasn't got hacked for, almost 8 months, five or 6 months. So, you know, now she's getting back out there. She's getting pushed around. And you just got to get back in the hang of all that contact and then transferring that to the other end of the court and getting back on defense. So we'll be fine.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we'll be fine.
So,
yeah, and I wanted to say, you know, we know what Brittany brings to the table. Diana Taurasi, I mean, it's her name speaks for itself. But what young players can you see becoming leaders on this team? Like, I love Bria Hartley. I think she looks capable. And you got our girl Shatori down there, Walker Kimbrough, who I've interviewed many times. And you want to shut down the team's best player. She's strapped on defense. She was valuable, you know, for the Mystics last year during that championship run. So what's your thoughts on that?
We love what Tori's giving her, and you know she's actually shooting after practice with Diana, DT's owner, you know. And a lot of people, you know, seem to forget. I mean, Diana's the GOAT, but she had that injury, so she's still pacing herself and trying to get. She hasn't played really, so she's trying to get her timing back too. And obviously, it's going to come. I mean, she's still great, even missing that much time. But she's been a great, I think, mentor for Tori. And Tori's going to be electrifying off the bench, or if she starts, you know, we might, we still haven't really figured that out yet. But mm-hmm. Mia Coffey's great. She's a big guard that can, we can throw in the post and cause mismatch problems, kind of like what Dewana Bonner did for them last year. But Bria Hartley is definitely someone that can give us instant offense mm-hmm. off the bench. And Skylar, you know, Skylar's missed an entire mm-hmm. year. So once she gets in her groove and she's going to be out there with Diana Taurasi, and you put Tori out there on the other wing, and then you got Brittany Griner, Brianna Turner at the fourth spot, then, you know, it's going to be pretty, it's going to be pretty fun to watch. So
Chas, do you...
Yeah, Skylar coming back, it kind of reminds me when Cheryl Swoops came back. Cheryl Swoops, you know, as you well know, I know you saw the documentary. You played back in the day. She said she had breast milk leaking at halftime and all types of stuff.
Was and it she crazy was rusty when pumping? She came right. back, yeah, and then we were all like, okay, we got a chance, and then, like, that 7 or 8 game, it was like, okay, no, she's back.
That's it's crazy,
was,
right?
They had a chance against Houston that year because she was slow and still kind of, you know, just out of rhythm.
Mm.
Yeah, but then that 7 or 8 game, we were like, oh, okay, she's back.
I'm glad you mentioned that.
It's going to be how it's going to be with DT. DT is kind of pacing herself, but... Obviously, she's going to be back. She's working hard, and Skylar's going to get back in tune. So, you know, hopefully it'll come, you know, really quickly. And if not, you know, we'll have to manage, and other people have to step up, like Tori and Bria. So, and obviously, yeah. We got BG, and she's one.
Of
she's
course.
A goddess. She's unstoppable in the paint. She'll get her rhythm, and inside, she's just unstoppable. So.
Yeah, we got somebody else here in D.C., Tiana Hawkins. She also came off of pregnancy. She's balling out. But I'm glad you mentioned, you know, you thinking you had a chance. I'm going to first say that Sabrina Ionescu, she struggled in her debut. And I'm wondering, do you think, like, these young stars of today are capable of progressing the game? Because, like, I want to say many fans hold on to what I call the Cynthia Cooper, the Shamika Holmes-Claw, Lisa Leslie, the days where, the league just had a true buzz. I'm not saying it doesn't now, but it was dope back then. Those Houston Commons games would be sold out, you know. And again, back then, to me, we didn't have social media. We didn't have all the outlets we had today to spread, you know, just the highlights and the word of the game. So I know the CBA, the new CBA, you know, with higher pay was definitely progress. But do you think these young ladies can continue on and build a game on the foundation that, you know, your era built?
Well, you know, like, our era was just something special. We understood that there wasn't a professional platform for women to play. And those great players, Cynthia Cooper and, you know, Teresa Edwards, they all went overseas when it wasn't, like, very easy. So when we got the opportunity to play here in the States, we really appreciate it, and we play with that passion. You know, so the young kids, they're in college, and they see them, and somewhat they might not have that same appreciation. Like, it's kind of given, like, okay, if I'm good enough, I'm going to go pro. And they've always seen the pro league, you know. I'm finding out what their ages are, and I'm like, oh, my gosh. So it's just different. But I believe that this pandemic and this time, like being here in the bubble and having basketball taken away, I think that's helped this younger generation of our league, and not only of our league, but just in college basketball, in high school. I think the kids and the younger generation are starting to really appreciate what they have and what basketball has afforded them because it was taken away. So I think they can build from there, and obviously being in the bubble is definitely going to just give them some very real teaching moments about the game and about this league and about how important it is. So I think the league is in good hands, and I believe they'll learn a lot from this whole situation and move the league forward.
Well, it has been amazing having you on. I hope you don't become a stranger. I thank you for the retweets and this for being dope. And your resume, like I said, I couldn't share it all, man, but I was in awe just reading it, and, you know, look forward to all that your team is expecting. I hope you stay safe down there in the bubble, and, you know, thanks again for joining us.
No, thanks for having me. I mean, we're sisters. We support our brothers. So if you guys reach out, we're ready to come on the show. Like you said, Skylar did the show. for sure. Thanks for the support.
Oh,
yeah, yeah, pass the word. Maybe she can come on again. You know, somehow, you know, slide us that info. You know, DM me, not for myself. But you know, of course, they would love to have it.
Oh, my God.
But again, yeah, just thanks for joining
me. I did have one more question. I had one question. Yeah. I had one more question. I had one more question, though. I did.
Oh, yeah.
I had one question, because you did play for the Mystics in 2009, 2010. How would you describe your time here in D.C., and did you experience go-go and mumble sauce?
Oh my God. I could not get used to the go-go. I mean, I am a true Southerner all the way. I love D.C. I have nothing but love for D.C. The fans were amazing. They followed me. They still follow me.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, I enjoyed my time there a lot. My family loved coming to D.C., you know.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, it was a very great experience. And, you know, it's one that's dear to my heart. I stayed there for a long time.
Awesome.
Even due to dysfunction. So I must have enjoyed it.
Awesome.
But now they got it together, and they learned from those experiences, and they're champions. So I was really excited for that, and for the city, and for the fans.
Awesome.
Oh, yeah, me too.
They did do a lot.
Well, thank you for being on. I appreciate
thanks
it.
Thanks again.
Thank
we
you so much.
Look forward to having you in the future.
Definitely.
All right, you guys keep doing what you do.
All right. Stay blessed.
Bye-bye.
Mm-hmm.
You too.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
All right, man. Banging show. Thank you, Miss Chastity Melvin. She was awesome, Ray. Ray, stay getting bangers, man.
Absolutely,
I appreciate you, Ray, man.
We only had a realist on the Urban Sports.
We do, dog. Only the realist, man.
And Will, just thanks for the Walt Williams questions, brother. It was
Will was dope, great. Man. He was dope, man. Real talk. Real people do real things, man.
I'm just trying to contribute. I'm just trying to do my part.
Oh, man, my man. All right, man. It's been a great show. Thank you all for listening to the Urban Sports Scene. Anyway, you've been listening to the Urban Sports Scene.
The ages.
You dig.
Deuces.
All right, lead us out, big homie. RIP Mega.